Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, back again for another episode of the Nolcast. Bud, it's an exciting one. Forgive us if maybe we laugh a little bit more or just have a general feeling of excitement. I'm not even sure today, once the news was announced, that I didn't realize just kind of the collective malaise that kind of hung around the program for the past couple of months. And maybe today was the first real day where you, or maybe actually that was last Saturday. But just the idea of a very real transition period, and no better way to mark that than the announcement that Willie Taggart is your new head coach.
Man, you realize what we were doing 6 days ago? I was interviewing a dude who got kicked out of a coach's call-in show.
Yes. Physically removed from a coach's call-in show for asking a completely legitimate, respectful question.
And I don't bring that up to complain or to go negative, but it really is amazing the attitudes of people and how much they've changed in a very short period of time here. Jimbo Fisher is out. Willie Taggart is in. And you would be a crazy person to think that, as far as resume goes, that's an upgrade, because it's not. However, when you consider the exact, you know, the situations they're in, like Jimbo Fisher's message going stale and the unlikelihood of him getting back his team, and you compare it to Willie Taggart, who comes in and, I mean, I will get into this a little bit, but everybody seems really excited, from players to recruits to boosters of all, you know, ages and races. And, man, it's hard to think this program's not in a better spot now than it was a week ago.
It really is. And, man, I look forward to it. There was a couple times this year where we did podcasts where, look, I grew up as diehard a fan as Florida State football as possible, and anytime I get a chance to sit down and talk about it, I'm excited to do it. But there were some podcasts this year that just felt like we were just absolutely just kind of sludging through muck, and happy to be able to see what's maybe on the other side. So, as you said, comparative resumes, not sure you necessarily would be able to identify an upgrade, but just the change for this situation. Look, you talk about kind of the tornado of insanity that we were in there with that whole kind of the end period where you kind of knew somebody was going but kept hearing another message, and just the way the situations like that play out, to be able to go from there to having Texas A&M pay you to remove some of the dead weight from your staff, and to be able to in 4 or 5 days find your number one target, be able to lock him down and be in a place where you can announce him as your new head coach. Want to give credit to an administration that's not always received full confidence or backing per se, and just note the job that they did. And this is a little bit late, but also want to note that whether we're interviewing a guy for getting thrown out of a coaching show or sitting here kind of basking in the relief and the excitement that surrounds the Taggart hire, that all these podcasts are brought to you by Louisiana Hot Sauce, and we are fortunate to have them and fortunate to have the listeners that we do, and some of the examples of support that they've thrown our way in the past 24 hours have been humbling and very much appreciated.
Yeah, we looked tonight at where we were on the iTunes rankings, and we climbed all the way to 21st as of this recording, and like I made a joke on Twitter, looking around and guys, I think we might be lost, because I'm not seeing any other like team podcast, and certainly not any college football team podcast anywhere near us. Like I'm looking around, it's like, oh hey, Paul Feinbaum show, Dan Patrick show, Tony Kornheiser show, Jalen and Jacoby, like serious national programs that are also on television. So y'all are addicted, and we love you for it. And use Louisiana Hot Sauce. We even had a guy email us that. Did he have an ulcer? He had some kind of stomach condition where he could not consume spicy food, but he showed us that he had bought a couple bottles just to support us. Like, that's awesome, man.
That's awesome. That's cool. Absolutely awesome.
You know what else is awesome, dude? This is a transition. That's what we call it in a radio biz. How many people were just very, like they kind of wanted Fisher out by the end, but just didn't have a lot of confidence that the administration would get this thing done? And there was a lot of negativity online, like, oh, they're gonna screw this up, they're gonna screw this up. And even today in our Slack chat at for Tomahawk, I got out of my workout at the gym and I got a text, said, hey, maybe rolling right now. And so I hit everybody with the ad. I said, hey, everybody get ready, let's communicate, you know, don't double Facebook stuff. Don't screw this up. You know, just talking, and we'll get through this. And this will be great. And we'll get a head coach hired. And it didn't come for a little while, like 5 hours. And in that time, people were like, I think something's messed up here. Something's definitely screwed up, and all this other stuff. And it was like, hey, what are you worried? I was like, no, not as confident as I've ever been. I mean, nobody on the Oregon side thinks he's coming back, and everybody on the Florida State side who I trust and who could potentially have good info thinks he's coming to Tallahassee. So given those, you know, if none of those things change, all we're talking about is when he's going to schedule a team meeting. You know, ultimately that came. So I think we should probably start out here by saying good work by the committee. You know, John Thrasher, Stan Wilcox, Ed Burr. It's hard to parse out exactly who deserves the most credit in that group. I mean, I've had a lot of people tell me, hey, this is kind of Thrasher's legacy, and he really led the group. But I was not inside the group, so I don't know. But I do know that the leadership of Florida State got a bunch of coaches reaching out to them. We were told over 20. They went through them. They identified Jimbo Fisher was going to leave and was acting in a way that really couldn't invite him back. They got a search committee going. They actually hired a search firm early on, but they couldn't do anything that would show, hey, like we're moving on from Fisher until, you know, he officially went, of course. Of course. And they narrowed it down. They looked at different guys, and ultimately they settled on a choice that I think all our listeners know who have been listening for a while was the most obvious and best realistic choice that they could have got. And they got it done in the span of
4 days, 5 days.
You did a major national coaching search in like 5 days.
Ask Tennessee how that goes.
Mm.
Ask a lot of program. You don't always get your one, and you got to give a lot of credit. I think all three of those gentlemen deserve an exceptional amount of credit, and a lot more than just three. But I know that this was Thrasher took certainly a lot of leadership here, and this was something that I think is involved of a president of a school, as you'll see in a hire. And kudos to all three. They did a great job within each other from what I've heard, but they were able to leverage some existing contacts that they had. Look, as an institution, this is something that hadn't happened in four decades. Stan Wilcox has his strengths and weaknesses, I'm sure, but one of those strengths is not a ton of experience negotiating major big-time salaries like this, particularly, obviously, in a new hire. A new hire is much different, or at least there's different parts of it, than drawing up and executing an extension. So I think people had maybe the tools there, but were able to be creative and have some others that were outside of that group able to help them in ways. And, well, look, inside baseball, whatever the hell happened, it doesn't really matter at this point. You identified the guy. The three people that led the committee were successful in getting him to sign on the line that is dotted. And you didn't have some drawn-out search where you went to your two, and then you went to your three, and then maybe you settled on your fourth option or something like that. So well done. And not only, but I'll point out, well done in the execution and time period that this existed. But this was not, you know, there was probably some of this that went on, but this was always going to be those three guys' decision. This was not, you know, Booster A calling in. And
they said it on the booster call, remember?
Right. Booster B getting in an argument, and Booster C trying to trump his guy. This was really well done all around. So, you know, we mentioned that Florida State has strengths and weaknesses, but I would say the way that the boosters let this play out is in a supportive role, but not necessarily in a role that, you know, got in the middle of everything and created more harm than good. It was just a process that played itself out about as well as it could.
When we got tipped to that booster call, you remember what it was described as? A courtesy call? It was basically like, hey, we're going to give you the courtesy heads up that y'all are not going to be overly involved in this search, basically.
Yeah, it was a call that put some well-defined boundaries in, and it was a courtesy, hey, here's what's going on. This isn't going to last that long. Please let us do this.
And you can't have a zillion boosters fouling up a search, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you just can't. Like that's how you get a Tennessee situation. Instead, Florida State got their number one dude. And I got to tell you, like, I think the drop-off to whoever the number two was potentially significant, depending on who you believe. I know some people think it was Charlie Strong. I don't necessarily know if I do. Nobody ever really gave me an indication that he was a real legitimate candidate. But I think everybody really liked the idea of Willie Taggart, and I do think you'd be hard pressed to find a lot of people that thought, hey, there's a more realistic candidate out there who's also better.
Right. So we know that,
and good job looking past his overall record, by the way.
Exactly where I was going. You know, there probably was a little bit of pushback in that room and people's opinion, whose matters, just looking, oh, well, he's 3 games under .500 for his career. If you want to spend 10 minutes, and that's really all you need to spend, you can get a much better context as to the situations that existed in those stops and what was involved and what he inherited. And let's not get bogged down in this, Bud, but why don't you just give a kind of a 90-second recap as far as his time at Western Kentucky and South Florida?
Sure. Okay. So Taggart is 41 years old. He's from Palmetto, which is basically Bradenton, Florida, about an hour south of Tampa. Played for Bradenton Manatee, which is a historic program in the state, if you're not familiar. Won a state title, All-State as a QB. Was an excellent quarterback as a player at Western Kentucky. Was a finalist multiple times, I believe, for the Walter Payton Award. The Walter Payton Award is basically the equivalent of the Heisman at the 1AA level, which now is called FCS. But anyway, then he moved on to coach Western Kentucky as an assistant. Then he went to Stanford. He played for a Harbaugh at WKU, was recruited by Jim, and then went to Stanford, worked under Harbaugh out there, and then came back to become Western Kentucky's head coach. WKU in that first year, they were moving up to FBS, which is, you know, rough. They went 2-10. Then he went 7-5 and 7-5. Taggart won, I believe, 14 of his last 20 games there. I mean, that's a pretty nice run to finish that out. And that means, I mean, he had a big time turnaround there. I mean, to finish 14-6 after starting like he did, the story is going to be the same in every program he's been at. It's like, hey, he took over a bad program and the trajectory just went straight up. At Oregon, or at South Florida, came there, Skip Holtz ran that thing into the ground. And I don't get that, by the way. Like, this is not a Skip Holtz podcast, but he's done a better job at La Tech. And Skip Holtz wasn't terrible at East Carolina, but at USF, he was really bad. Taggart comes in there, first year, 2-10, pretty awful. Next year, 4-8, then 8-5, then 10-2. And to be honest, if he come back this year, he probably beats UCF and goes to a BCS game. You know, the Scott Frost UCF that just got the Nebraska job, I think. Then he takes off for Oregon. Look, he went 7-5 at Oregon. That's not a great record. His quarterback did get hurt. I believe he was 1-4 without the quarterback and 6-1 with, if my math's on that's right. But that's not a great record. But it does show, hey, you know, the quarterback was better. The one thing about Oregon, though, man, he absolutely was killing it on the recruiting trail. Oregon had a top 5 recruiting class. Oregon has never sniffed a top 5 recruiting class. Those folks do backflips up there if they touch the top 15, because there just aren't good players in the state of Oregon. Not enough of them. Taggart was bringing in kids from Florida and Texas and California and getting them there. And now he gets to go to a place, and I said this on the Instant Reaction podcast, to a place where you can get studs in your own backyard, man. That's big. So in a nutshell, Taggart seems to get players, turn programs around, and win once he gets those players in there. What we have not seen yet is Taggart take over a program that was already good, right? Like Western Kentucky was not good before he took it over, as far as, you know, at the FBS level, that they had to adapt to that. South Florida was in a downward spiral. Oregon in the last year of Mark Helfrich was just absolutely terrible. Mm-hmm. He's made good hires. He's adapted his offense as he's gone. We'll see how he adapts it here. But look, there's never a reason in the world to be really happy about this guy. I think your worst case scenario here, and I'll give David Hale kind of credit for this, although I think I was actually saying it on the instant at the same time as he typed it, but he said, look, worst case scenario, energized fan base, modernized offense, super duper talented roster, because that's how good a recruiter he is. Mm-hmm. Best case scenario, you got a 41-year-old head coach who recruits like gangbusters, has shown he can adapt an offense, and made some pretty good hires, and maybe wins a national championship or two and becomes the first African-American coach to do so at your school.
And let me add to that best case scenario, has a legitimate love for the – or at least has a legitimate, like, fanhood and excitement for the university and the job that he sits in.
Exactly right. Yeah, I mean, dude, Willie grew up an FSU fan and a big one. And, like, Stephen Godfrey, my colleague at ESPN, was talking about how when Florida State played USF, You know, Willie's brother showed up and some friends, and they were in FSU gear, despite the fact that his brother was the head coach at USF. And he, I guess he wanted them to change, and they're like, no. No, it's all Knowles. We chop it up. That's big, man. Because like that is one thing I got to say. I do think Willie really cares about his players too, you know, and I think they feel that love. And I was talking to a friend who I know we're going to interview as well. He talked about that. I think one of the reasons today why the decision got delayed and delayed and delayed, or at least the announcement, I think Taggart was really agonizing over how to tell his players, man, because I don't think there's any way in the world that he ever thought he was going to be at Oregon for just a year. I think if he had thought that there was even a chance he'd be at Oregon for just 1 year, that he probably doesn't take it, that he probably stays at USF with a loaded roster for one more year. But you know what? His dream job, the one he actually told his players was his dream job, it wasn't going to come open because, and he would know this, I think, because he has the same agent as Jimbo Fisher. So, you know, Jimmy Sexton would know, hey, Willie, you need to take this Oregon job because I'm about to sign Jimbo Fisher to a $50 million guaranteed extension. If you're Willie Taggart, you're like, well, damn it. Like, that's my dream job, but that guy just got locked up for basically a decade, you know? So if you had told Willie Taggart this time last year after Jimbo had signed his extension, hey, Willie, don't worry. You'll be the head coach of Florida State next December 5th. He would have told you you're crazy, right? And you probably would have been. I don't think he would have left for any other job, seriously here, to be the head coach of any other job after just 1 year at Oregon, except for his dream job, the Florida State job, to get to come home. You know, his dad passed away last year, to get to be closer to his family and his mom, who still lives in Florida, to go coach at his childhood favorite school, and a school who he's got to think when he's a young coach, man, if I ever got the keys to that thing, it's good night, Lock City. Mm-hmm. You know,
man, it's just an awful good feeling to think about when you have the turnover and the excitement that has obviously you and I are part of, but the general fan base at large. And then it was I think it was really telling the way that the players responded on Twitter as well. That's, you know, guys had a lot of nice things to say about Jimbo Fisher and kind of that he tried to make them into men and the influence they had on their life and stuff like that. But I also think there was a real general kind of excitement and just a little bit of a relief to see that there was going to be a turnover and probably a guy that's about as good of a person as you could have gone and gotten and placed in that position.
Absolutely. I mean, I really don't think you could have hired a better guy for this year in this job. I really don't. I mean, that's big. I put the article out there before. I said, hey, if he gets this job, I think they're going to flip several kids immediately. I think they're going to get the attention of some more kids. Recruits are really excited about this. I mean, really excited. Mm-hmm. In a way that they haven't been excited about Florida State in, I don't know, maybe a year and a half. Parents seem to be pretty excited. We know a couple of them on Twitter. I'm not going to give away their names. Obviously, I think some of them would prefer not to have, you know, thousands of followers. High school coaches in the state, my friends, a lot of them on Facebook, are very excited. I think they're excited to see Willie at Florida State. I think everybody involved in this is excited to see a dude who actually earnestly wants to be in Tallahassee, right?
Mm-hmm.
And not like, hey, do I want to be in Baton Rouge or Auburn or College Station or anywhere but Tallahassee? Like, no, I think he really wants to be there. And people are excited about this, man. This is going to be good, I think.
Well, it's been kind of a wild ride, and look, we were up and doing 2:30 in the morning, or you were calling people at 2:20. I was texting people last night at 1:45. I mean, this was just an insane process, and from when it was pretty evident that you were going to have a coaching change to the coaching hire. Obviously, anybody that produces any type of content that's tied to Florida State right now has had a demand and probably some successful periods of time as far as their listenership, readership, whatever metric you want to use. You know, but I think just trying to find a way to say that happy with how we handled this. If you've been listening to this podcast for 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks, 8 years, that you've had a pretty good idea as to what was coming down the pike. We began the Fisher conversation, I think, at an appropriate time, and were able to go ahead and identify. I want to give credit to you in particular for identifying Taggart and talking about him, I think, as soon as September or October. So
it was one of those hypothetical episodes, wasn't it? It was like, hey, if Jimbo did leave by some crazy thing, like, who would you go get? Because the guy asked us, I can recall this. He's like, hey, all these athletic directors have short lists. Like, who's on your short list? You remember that? I think that's how that came about.
Yeah, I think that was the exact question. I do.
Damn, we got it right. And so did the FSU admin, which is much more important, by the way, than us getting it right. Like, for the bigger picture, I'd rather us be wrong and him be right, but I like both being right. That's pretty solid. And by the way, you nailed the salary. I don't know if Judson can dub that in there.
I think ultimately we're going to be looking at a deal here that's 5 to 6 years in length at right around $5 million, maybe 5.1 a year.
Comes out 6 years, $30
million. Look, we're both fortunate to be able to have contacts and friendships with people that are able to provide us information, and this has been a lot of fun working with you for the Nolcast and us being able to compare pieces of information and how they fit with each other. I am not necessarily like a part of Tomahawk Nation. I occasionally will give an opinion on a piece, or you and I will talk about something, but I'm not like an active contributor. But I do want to give credit to all of the other people not named Bud Elliott that work on that site. I mean, it's been incredible to watch. I'm in kind of the editorial conversation that you guys have every day, but want to give credit to David, Kurt, all the people over there. It's not I'm not able to sit here and name every one of them just for time, but you've got great guys on the beat. You have great people who help you behind the scenes, and just kudos to Tomahawk and what they've done. So well done, Bud. You've got a really impressive operation over there.
I appreciate it, man. We really do have great people over there, and I'm glad that that's growing as well, that people are trusting other voices. When I first started to kind of expand and open up, a lot of people were like, we would have a guy write an article, and I thought it'd be a really good article. And then literally the first comment would be like, well, what does Bud think about this? Like, you know, let's let the article speak for itself.
Yeah, I think enough about it to have this guy and work with
him. Yeah, exactly. So I guess we're trying to think of other things we can talk about tonight with Taggart. They are going to introduce him at the basketball game tomorrow, which we actually broke. I'm a little surprised Florida State didn't have that information like ready to go and tweeting it out like that we're beating them on stories like that. But that's a conversation for another day, I guess. I think Taggart's very well suited specifically for Florida State. A couple weeks back, October 30th, actually, I did the DeLand Quarterback Club speech, which I always do every year. Great, great little quarterback club over there. And if you guys are nearby, you should go check that out. They have some good speakers throughout the year. They asked me, they said, so what do you think coaching changes wise? Because this is literally like days after McElwain got fired. And I was like, well, if I'm Florida, I go get Dan Mullen. Because I think he represents the highest floor of that program. I mean, he's definitely going to give good quarterback play. And that's something Florida has not had in, you know, a long, long time. And then I think Jimbo Fisher will go to Auburn or maybe Texas A&M. But at that time, I wasn't buying Texas A&M quite as much. I thought that he was much more likely to go to Auburn because Auburn had lost to LSU and had not yet beaten Georgia or Alabama. And they said, well, what happened? I was like, well, then I think Florida State would go get Willie Taggart and see if he would leave Oregon after just 1 year, which I think he would. And Lex from the club, he tweets me. He's like, you realize you got all this a month in advance. I was like, well, yeah, but that's kind of, I was like, don't tweet these things. You know, you're talking to a club, but I do want to give those guys a shout out. Man, this has just been a crazy coaching offseason. A lot more Taggart content coming. There's a press conference tomorrow. I think it's at 11, if I recall. So that'll be pretty cool. Stephen Godfrey has some great stuff up on SB Nation, by the way. There's a piece he did embedded with Oregon last year during National Signing Day, which is pretty sweet. They also have a piece Godfrey did about when Taggart got to USF. And this is something I mentioned in the instant reaction, his ability to adapt in offense, right? He got there and literally, he's changed his offense kind of at every stop. And that's something that's mostly good because he's adapted to the players. Now, some Oregon fans will tell you, and I don't think they were saying this a whole lot, to be honest, when Taggart was still coaching there, Ingram, just a theory of mine. But now that he's gone, they feel good to tell you that they don't like that he doesn't have one core offensive philosophy that he sticks to, which I disagree because I think almost all of his offenses have the philosophy that we're going to make the defense respect the quarterback run. We're going to run the ball with power, and we're going to try and throw the ball deep and pay, you know, make it pay if you sneak your safeties up. Now, how you do the other stuff is different, but You know, he does like to incorporate tempo more. Like here's a quote he said at USF, right? He said, "That's so important to us. That's why we have the respect, because you don't normally see coaches do that." Senior running back Marlon Mack said after the win for CCF, "I don't know of coaches at this level that would listen to players asking to change things. We said, please let us go fast. Let us go and we'll show you." And he did. Because Taggart didn't used to be a no-huddle guy. He's actually kind of a fairly recent convert. I mean, like within the last three seasons. Quote, "At first it was, well, let's just run West Coast and see how it looks in the gun," Taggart said. "And then it got intriguing because we started seeing all these options available we didn't have under center. And then we started running all the practice reps. Quentin," which is Quentin Flowers, the USF QB, "got in the gun, spread out, but with the shifts and motions, and it was like, wow." So anyway, very interesting stuff there from Taggart. You can go read that on SB Nation, and I'll probably do a wrap-up or a roundup, rather, of all the stuff that Godfrey has done on Willie Taggart. He certainly profiled him several times. The other thing I would encourage you to go do is there's a documentary on NBC called Taggart. Just Google it, Taggart NBC documentary, and watch that. It's really cool. It's about 20 minutes long. Really neat stuff. I'll see if I can find a way to put that on Tomahawk as well. What else you want to talk about? I mean, there's so much to talk about with a new coaching hire, man.
There's tons to talk about, Bud. I doubt it'll be too long before we do another one of these. So it's not like we've got to squeeze everything in. Why don't we just have the last point of conversation be give us your opinion as far as Jim Leavitt and whether or not he ultimately follows Taggart to Tallahassee.
That's a home run hire. That's something I can absolutely talk about. I can give you 5 minutes on that. Jim Leavitt is a damn good defensive football coach, you know, dismissed from USF. I believe later settled with the university, right? So there's a lot of people in Florida who don't think he should have been dismissed. I'm just telling you that. Did a great job coaching at USF. Was basically immediately snatched up by the 49ers, who were then coached by who? Jim Harbaugh. And then he goes to Colorado under Mike McIntyre as the defensive coordinator. And McIntyre's, you know, a pretty good coach. But Colorado's offense was trash, y'all. Jim Leavitt's defense is what helped Colorado win the Pac-12 South in 2016 and get to the Pac-12 title game. Then he goes to Oregon. And Oregon, I think, improved from like 126th in defense, I think it was, to 25th or something, which is a it's pretty nice when you can jump 100 spots. That's always pretty good. Look, Leavitt is a multiple guy. He believes in attacking, right? He's not going to sit back and play a lot of soft coverage. It's not to say he won't play any coverage. He's not just a guy who's you know, blitz maniac with no rhyme or reason. But he does want to be a multiple front guy. They'll play some one, they'll play some two up front. He is kind of a split safety coverage guy, but he's not traditional split safety coverage in terms of it's not necessarily a lot of two. They will end up showing a split look and then playing more with you know your safety over the top of the two side and let the boundary guy play, you know, play one-on-one, come down and take away the RPO game. I think Jim Leavitt's going to get to Florida State and be like, "Whew, man, this is nice." Like remember those Jim Leavitt defenses that kicked the crap out of Jimbo Fisher's offenses?
Absolutely.
In 2008 and 2009. And they definitely played in 09. 09's the game that Ponder made that incredible throw, but they were really...
Yeah, 09's the white jersey
it was super
frustration
hot.
Game.
Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
But that is about the best... That's one of the better throws that we've seen in the past 15 years. Is Fortson the one that brings that in, the back of the end zone?
I think so.
Or fails to bring that in, but...
I think so, or was it Goodman?
Yeah, well, nonetheless, we'll find it. We'll post it in the show notes or something like that.
You want to talk about an identity? Like, you know, the Oregon fans saying, "Oh, Willie Taggart doesn't have an identity on offense." Okay, yeah, it seems to be evolving. The identity is fit the scheme to your players. Jim Leavitt absolutely has an identity.
Yeah, he's got a real defined identity.
Yeah, absolutely. And he is going to yell a lot, and he is very much like, if y'all are missing, not that Charles Kelly doesn't yell, because he did, or that Pruitt didn't yell, or Stoops didn't, I mean, God, Mark Stoops would definitely yell. But if you like that, like, fiery defensive coordinator, Mickey Andrews.
Yeah.
Hey, that was kind of, Judson, don't edit that out. That was kind of like our jinx moment tonight. Yeah. Physical, very much like stressing the fundamentals of defense, not trying to overcomplicate it. You know, he's not really trying to trick you a ton. I mean, they're looking to get turnover, certainly, but I think Jim Leavitt's a hell of a defensive coach. I think it says a lot that Harbaugh brought him in. with the 49ers. We saw what he did with Colorado's defense and quick turnarounds too. I mean, Colorado's defense went from not that good to really good in 1 year. Oregon's went from terrible to like passable in a year. Those are big time turnarounds.
The other thing it signifies, Bud, and what you just said is absolutely correct. Jim Leavitt didn't come here for cheap if Florida State's able to get him. That's yet another sign that I think we can put this dumb narrative that, you know, Florida State's trying to operate on some shoestring budget or something like
this
that.
This is the stupidest.
Let's retire it right now.
They had the number six coaching staff budget in the country last year. Like, I tweeted from the Tomahawk Nation account. I said, look, you guys remember when there was like this 36-hour period where people were trying to act like Florida State was not a destination job and that like Oregon was even remotely in Florida State's stratosphere as a job? Get out of here. Come on. This is Florida State. The last time a non-USC Pac-12 team won a national title, Willie Taggart could not drive a car. If you don't think he's leaving Oregon for Florida State, assuming he got a reasonable offer, of course he's coming. It's Florida State. That's a job that can compete with any job in the nation, pretty much. And if you grew up as a big-time Florida State fan in the state of Florida and you have connections in the state of Florida, as he does, of course he's coming. And the Oregon people who are even halfway reasonable knew it. And I'm glad he's coming.
We've said this for a long time. Florida State may not have the resources to have every bell and whistle, but I have full confidence that Florida State has more than enough resources to be competitive. And I think this ultimately, when we look back on it, this coaching staff is just going to be another reminder of that. So with that, Bud, why don't we pause here? We'll pick up, we won't be short of content with recruiting coming up and a lot of fun things to watch and play out. And we'll have a decent amount of conversations as far as what the ultimate composition will look like on this staff. But
hold on. I want one more thing here. Let's finish on an aggressive note, Ingram. I just pulled up the YouTube. Willie Taggart's last big game at USF. It's against UCF. They have the ball, right? So UCF throws their final play on offense. It's incomplete. There's about a minute and 40 left, and USF is taking over on I can't believe I'm doing live play-by-play of a 2016 game, but just go with me on this. Trust me. Minute 44 left. They're up 41-31. UCF only has one timeout. So Scott Frost has the headset off. He's crumpled up his play sheet. He stuffed it in the back of his pocket. He knows it's done. He hands a headset to another guy. It's first and goal from the 8 for USF. USF should probably be taking a knee, right?
Mm-hmm.
Taggart's trying to send a message. They are trying to score, and they're getting back up to the ball quickly. Dude. He's trying to rub it in his rival's face. First and goal, second and goal, third and goal, fourth and goal, 19 seconds left. Guess what? Hurry up. USF hurries up to the line so they can get one more snap off against UCF, and they punch it in from the 2 for a touchdown to send a message, 48-31.
Let's do it.
That's cool, man. Like that. Like, you know what? And the players were loving it. Now, could you say, hey, that's not super bright? Not really, because they only had one timeout and you're up 10. But you can tell, like, there's a mentality there. It's a more aggressive mentality, and I think it'll especially if Leavitt does follow through, as we expect, and as the Oregon people, most of them at least, expect, you're gonna have a more aggressive mentality on both sides of the ball, come 2018.
I think that's all we need, man.
5 stars on iTunes, as always. Hit us up. Support the sponsors.
We didn't get a chance actually to thank Madison Social and For the Table Restaurant Group. We'll mention them now. Very loosely planning to do something during the spring game. We'll have more details on that, but looking to have our first kind of Nullcast outing, something that we've tried a couple other times and just logistically hasn't been possible. So I want to remind everybody of For the Table Restaurant Group. Their Madison Social is kind of the flagship and the part of it that's been with us since day one. Obviously, Centrale Township and Sodo, the more recent addition. Couldn't ask for a better partner. They are as supportive of us as any entity could be. And it would be challenging. I would rephrase that to be probably impossible to find any other group that has kind of their finger on the pulse of this fan base as what Matt and his team do over there. So just ask that you continue to support them. continue to support the Nolcast, and we look forward to a lot of future episodes.